Hi, I'm Sensei Tony, and today we're going to discuss Buddhism and Bruce Lee. And for the occasion, I've worn my jumpsuit, tracksuit yellow from Game of Death, and also the cool tiger shoes. Joining me is Steve Tyson, who has his own cool Bruce Lee shirt, and we're going to get into a cool conversation about Bruce Lee and Buddhism.
So how did Bruce Lee have an effect on your life?
Wow. So I first became aware of Bruce Lee when I was 10 years old. It was 1973, and there was this movie coming out called Enter the Dragon. And I had become interested in martial art because there was a TV series that came out that same year called Kung Fu. I believe it was the same year. And so I just was mesmerized by this whole thing. And I had felt called since the time I was a really little boy that I would be like a spiritual teacher of some sort. But my family was Christian and, you know, I had no exposure to this. And this is 1973, so it's not like it is today where it's ubiquitous. And I fell in love with Bruce Lee. I mean, Bruce Lee became my hero, my icon. And, you know, unfortunately, he died within a few weeks of the release of the film. I believe it was just a few weeks after that. And of course it was devastating. Here's some guy, you know, who's like your hero, and as a young boy, you know, and then he's dead. And so I really began to seriously try to find everything I could about Bruce. And of course there were popular magazines that would tell you lots of things. But I became fascinated by his abilities as a philosopher, which a lot of people were not aware of. They only knew him as the action star, martial arts person. But he went to college in Washington State for philosophy. And so I read the Tao of Jeet Kune Do. I read some of his early writings that he had written as a part of his philosophy major. And Bruce became the man for me. I was a young 10-year-old Caucasian kid, and my hero was, you know, and I was already tall. I was already almost 6 foot, you know, and Bruce was like probably like, what, 5'5", something like that. And I was trying to become him. And if you look at pictures of me from that period, I got my hair cut just like Bruce. My glasses were just like the glasses he had, because he was nearsighted, but people didn't know that because he didn't wear them all the time. And my body, man, I mean, I devoted 4 or 5 hours a day to working out. And so I have some great photos of me doing Bruce Lee poses when I was like 12. And mm-hmm. I did, man, I had the body. I was always tall, so I was lankier, so I couldn't, you know, do the same. But I got into martial arts because of that, which, you know, I still play at today. But it was the spiritual or the philosophical for me that really changed my life. And I know if you watch interviews about famous people, they'll tell you how Bruce Lee, you know, influenced them. So I'm not unique in that. But the reason I'm here to this day as a Buddhist teacher is because of Bruce.
So as a kid, how did that also affect your social sphere and the other kids around you, because you're embodying this person who could be considered an other, and you're really like idolizing that. So how did that affect you, you know, growing up in the periods you had around you?
Well, you were an oddity, because remember too, martial arts was fairly new. And so I was the karate kid. And interestingly, my best friend, who became my best man when I got married, Henry Talley, he and I got into a fight in school. Now, I didn't know any martial arts at that point, but we got into the scrap. And we're sitting in the detention office waiting for the principal to come and paddle us, because they still paddled back then. And we're just sitting there. We're like enemies, right? And we had been all school year, because I was kind of a nerd. I was kind of I read a lot. I was kind of a science geek. You know, I was just kind of, I didn't fit in. And Henry was popular, very popular guy. He was half Japanese, half American. Mm-hmm. And we're sitting in the detention hall, and I had a Bruce Lee shirt on. And he goes, "You like him?" And so from there became this lifelong friendship that we overcame our troubles with each other, and Bruce was that reason. And then, and this is not very politically correct, but we became, so Henry got into martial arts with me, and we ended up like going to tournaments together, and then Henry kind of dropped out of it. He was a fantastic baseball player, tried out for the Pirates. But what we did was we kind of built this bond, and it began around Bruce. And we were known as the Chink Brothers in school, which of course is, you know, that's I'm not proud of that, but that is what they called us because that's how they related to it. And so it was, it actually in some ways made you more popular because it was unique. And that was the interesting thing about it. Even though Bruce was Asian American, and he was American, you know, it didn't matter. And I thought that was always a powerful thing, too, about his character, that his ancestry wasn't the main thing that people looked at.
How did you and your friend end up combating some of the negativity that you would get, especially if they're calling you all types of names or anything?
The Chink Brother was not a, that was not a negative. That was a positive in their minds, you see. For them, it meant we were part of this cool Asian martial arts culture. And so it was kind of slang around that. So it wasn't negative.
Right.
mean, the use of the word, you could say it's pejorative, but the idea behind it wasn't negative.
Gotcha. So being that young and being that influenced by Bruce Lee, and also growing up in a Christian household, how did some of those values mesh, or did they not mesh with some of what you were growing up in? And how did that, or did it lead you into the path of Buddhism that you're in today?
Well, it was a mix. Like, my dad encouraged me to be in the martial arts, and he liked Bruce Lee. So from that perspective, it was positive. My mother, on the other hand, is an evangelical Christian, and I was raised in that. She didn't like a lot of the philosophy stuff. So one anecdote that's kind of funny is that I used to take like the book, Tao Te Ching, and I had a small version of it. And when we would go to church on Wednesday nights, I would pull it out and slip it in between the hymnal sheets, and I'd be reading that. And I used to hide all my Buddhist philosophy books with my Playboys up in my closet because they were just as taboo, you know. And I actually got busted one night with that hymnal, and I was grounded for a week for that. So I had to kind of hide it in some ways. And however, what it did do is it encouraged me to seek out everything I could find about Buddhism. And over time, it actually influenced how I did Buddhism. You know, because when I started out, you know, I studied with some traditional teachers and kind of went the traditional method. But just as in martial art, Bruce Lee inspired me to kind of be the Bruce Lee of Buddhism. That was my desire. That just as Bruce Lee was trying to transcend style and tradition, I kind of have done the same thing within Buddhism. You know, we all have our roots, but I even joke that today, if you describe what I do, I call it mixed mindful arts. You know, mixed dharma arts. You know, that where I'm not, you know, strictly keeping in with just that one form. And there really is an interesting parallel with martial arts, because when the martial arts came in, most of it, the popular aspects of it, came in after the war, with fellows coming back, you know, having been exposed to it. And then, of course, with the advent of martial arts tournaments in the late 50s, early 60s, you know, it started to kind of come into its own. Bruce Lee, of course, helped that. But you saw at that time, everybody kind of stuck in their style. So if you were a Japanese stylist, you know, you really didn't do hook kicks. You just did, you know, reverse punches or front kicks. If you were a Korean stylist, you were doing all these wild, cool kicks. If you were Japanese stylist, you tended to be very hard and rigid. And if you were Chinese stylist, you were much more flowing and sort of, you know, kind of moving with things. And so I remember one time fighting in a tournament that I won that was they had open and closed tournaments. So closed tournaments were where it was just one style, mm-hmm. all Japanese or all Korean, whatever. And I went to this closed tournament that was Japanese oriented, and I won primarily because no one there acted like they ever saw a hook kick in their life. So every time someone would come in to do a reverse punch on me, I would just lean back and hit him in the head with a hook kick. Mm-hmm. And I kept doing it over and over. I mean, it wasn't even that clever, yeah, right. But nobody seemed to know how to defend against it.
Right.
And that kind of taught me something. I was like, wow, you know, you got to break out. Just like Bruce is saying, you got to break out of this traditional mm-hmm. box. You got to use what works mm-hmm. and let go of the rest. And mm-hmm. forget about styles as being so important. It's the individual, mm-hmm. you know. And I think what you saw then in the martial arts is that as open tournaments became more popular, the Americans primarily who were willing to follow Bruce, guys like Chuck Norris, Joe Louis, Benny Acurdes, Bill Wallace, they were willing to follow that and they mm-hmm. became the world champions and were beating everyone.
Right.
And so, you know, that was the development of what they called freestyle karate at that time. Mm-hmm. And then it eventually evolved into mixed martial art, which Bruce was the first proponent of. Mm-hmm. I see a parallel in Buddhism. Buddhism comes in during the 50s, same sort of thing. The beat movement, post-40s, the war, the beat movement, and becomes really popular. But even up until, I would say, maybe 20 years ago, style, like if you're a Zen guy, you're a Zen guy. If you're a Tibetan, you're a Tibetan. Mm-hmm. And there's no mixing. Mm-hmm. And I decided I wanted to really truly follow Bruce's principles mm-hmm. here, and I wanted to be Bruce Lee of Buddhism, so I went against that, and it was not easy. I was not accepted.
Were you already practicing Buddhism before you decided to evolve into more of that mixed mindful arts, or was it something that you entered in thinking I should come in with a more wider approach?
I had an open mind going in. But I did start sort of with a traditional, just like I did in martial arts, I started out with a traditional style.
And was it Bruce that kickstarted the interest in Buddhism, or Absolutely. Was it the philosophies that your mother might have been instilling in you?
It was Bruce Lee that led me into Buddhism, along with people like Alan Watts and others. Mm-hmm. And I have a Japanese aunt who mm-hmm. found out that her nephew was interested in Buddhism. I became her favorite nephew. So it was definitely that what led me into it. But I would also say that the spiritual aspects, you know, making spirituality the center of my life and living out of that space, you know, also came from my mother's side. Mm. And so it was a sort of an amalgamation. Yeah.
So as you ended up practicing and meeting up with a variety of different folks from a variety of different types of clergy and religious backgrounds, how does your philosophies align with others, or has it pushed conversations into different spaces because you're more willing to be open and less quote-unquote traditional when it comes to your practice?
The thing about Bruce, one of the main philosophies that he talked about was personal expression. You know, he would always say that knowledge always should lead to self-knowledge, but ultimately it should lead to expression. So for me, being a Buddhist teacher, this is my self-expression. You know, I'm still in martial arts, and that's a big part of my life, but it was really the Buddhism, the spirituality, that became my personal expression. The other thing that Bruce always emphasized was the Taoist-like idea of be like water, my friend, mm-hmm. you know? And so to me, that's the undergirding aspect of how I look at spirituality. Mm-hmm. So whether I'm working with someone from a different Buddhist tradition or a spiritual tradition, Christian, Jewish, Muslim, whatever, I see us sharing that mm-hmm. as a way that kind of connects us. I think that it has not only affected my Buddhism, And I'm pretty accepted now. I've written lots of articles in magazines, and I get invited to all the clubs. But, you know, it took a while to break in.
Yeah.
because people wanted to see what the fruit was. They wanted to see, is this legit? Mm-hmm. You know, so I think it's one thing to sort of rebel a little bit and say, well, I'm not going to be tied down. But you got to see what the guy has, too.
Yeah.
You know? But I think it has led into my dialogue with other traditions, in that in many ways I don't even see myself as a Buddhist per se. Mm. I'm expressing the teachings of oneness at my way and trying to be authentic and not copy anybody else, compare myself to anyone else, or compete with anyone else. I'm just sharing that expression, and if you dig it and it works, then yeah.
Nice. So going from traditional teaching to then expanding how you practiced Buddhist philosophy, did you receive any challenge by others who were within the practice? And if so, how did you end up handling that?
Well, you know, like all human groups, you know, there's a tendency towards this is legit and you're in the club and this is not and you're out. And most of the time they just ignore you or shun you. But there was a time when I was invited every year to speak at Harvard by one of my professors, Chris Queen. And I did this really big one. I had this big one coming up. There were like professors, hundreds of kids. And I was presenting my system, the four direction system of mindfulness. That was like my Jeet Kune Do, right? Mm. And so in the weeks leading up to it, a very well-known teacher basically challenged me, saying, you know, well, who is this guy? You know, kind of questioning the legitimacy of what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And as I had told you, when I was younger in the martial arts, I had received, you know, challenges physically and always kind of met those. So having somebody challenge me around this was not a big deal. So I said, yes, let's do it. In fact, why don't we have a Dharma combat session in front of all these people that are going to be there? Mm-hmm. And he said, okay, you know. And the day before my event, he had an injury and couldn't attend. And that was the last one. But, you know, that's the kind of thing that would happen. It's kind of crazy. And I get it on the one hand, you know, because everybody wants what, if they love something like martial art or Buddhism, they want it to be good. They don't want people to be getting some kind of flaky, half-baked situation. So I get that. Mm-hmm. But I think there's better ways to go about it, you know, than challenging. And I would say that Buddhism has evolved out of that. We're kind of at the stage now, just like in martial arts, if you watch Olympic karate today, which is like Japanese, they're throwing hook kicks all over the place,
right?
And in Buddhism today, a Zen guy will teach metta practices, which belong to Vipassana. And, you know, Tibetan practitioners will integrate practices from other groups, not as much as Zen would, but there's this openness. Mm-hmm. So even if a person identifies as one particular style, just as in martial art, they're integrating everything that works.
Have you begun, or in your practices, have you at all integrated some of what you might have learned growing up, especially with an evangelical mother or attending traditional Christian practices?
Actually, yeah, because in many ways, my form of Buddhism, I call it Protestant Buddhism. Mm. And that actually was a title that an academic Buddhist by the name of Obi Esker called it. And it was modern Buddhism. Mm. And so it was the idea that Buddhism had something very important to say in the 20th, 21st century, but it didn't have to be, you know, so heavily connected to ancient, you know, modalities or views of the cosmos that were sort of out of touch. You know, there was a teaching in ancient Buddhism that the center of the world was Mount Meru. You know, we know that was all mythological. And I would go so far as to say that Buddhism, unlike other religions, has never really bought into the historicity of their myths the same way. But at the same time, I think modern Buddhism or Protestant Buddhism, whatever you want to call it, it's a form of engagement with society and culture as it is right now. So like the other video we did, you know, science really informs my cosmology in the way I understand how the teachings are. But, you know, from the influence of evangelical Christianity, I really love mixing it up in terms of like how we do liturgy. Mm-hmm. So we use guitars, we use music, we use singing. Mm-hmm. So a lot of non-traditional stuff there. And I think of myself pretty much like a Dharma preacher. Mm. You know, I really believe I could walk into any temple, church, mosque, and mm-hmm. kind of do my thing, mm-hmm. you know, without having to kind of bring some kind of baggage that would inhibit me. And I have done that at all those three places. And so that has inspired that form of it.
So seeing how Bruce really wanted to represent himself while honing in on the Chinese tradition and where he came from, wanted to also represent himself as an international person and also bring some of these philosophies to the West. Yeah. How do you see yourself being able to incorporate some of these philosophies into what you see happening socially here in the West right now? And is there any kind of space for Buddhism to offer some type of healing or catharsis with what's happening?
I believe so. So I'm going to start with Bruce, mm-hmm. since it's over here. So Bruce was once asked in an interview, it's the famous one where he's asked about his philosophy, and he says, "Be like water, my friend." Mm-hmm. And he asked him, the interviewer says to him, "Do you see yourself as Chinese or American?" And Bruce said, "Neither." He said, "I see myself as a man, as a human being, a man of the world. And I, you know, in essence, wanting to lift up that we are different and we have those differences, but there's something more that unites us that's stronger." And he said something like, "I don't mean to sound like Confucius, man, but we're all one family under heaven," you mm-hmm, know? Mm-hmm. And so for me, I think the thing that Buddhism or the Dharma offers today is all of our teachings are what they call non-dual mm-hmm. or non-duality. So it's challenging you constantly to see things in a non-dualistic fashion. You know, we're ordinarily conditioned that way to see my side as the good guys and the other side as the bad guys. Mm-hmm. And I think that Buddhism, what it does is causes us to try to stretch beyond that. President Obama recently said something about that, you know, we have to be able to learn to try to get into the other person's view. Mm-hmm. And we might change their mind, they might change ours, but we can't stand apart from each other mm-hmm. and use our differences to kind of, you know, hit each other. But non-duality is hard, man, because like, our normal expression is to see something and go like, "Oh, that's not me, you know, that's mm-hmm. wrong." And I don't think that non-duality implies some kind of amorality. In fact, I think it causes us to engage compassionately. But for example, so if I see someone do something, I read the newspaper, I see something online, and it was some harmful act that was done, the question I ask myself out of that place of oneness, why would I do that? You know, and it mm-hmm. doesn't matter what it is, but some terrible thing someone did, I ask myself, why would I do that? As a way of trying to get into that space, not that I condone what they did, but that I can try to understand and maybe somehow contribute to taking away the fear and healing in some way. Mm. I also do the same when I see somebody do something wonderful. I say, "Wow, look what I did." And so it's this sense of realizing that you're not the other. Mm-hmm. And I think it's kind of related to the teachings of Christ, where he says, you know, love your enemy. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's kind of hard to do if your enemy is totally other than you. Mm. But once you start to realize that, you know, the enemy is us, you know, anything that's about you that is harmful, whatever is within you and being expressed, then it changes things. It doesn't make it easier. Mm-hmm. What excites me in social engagement, because I've always been involved in that, mm-hmm. is to bring these Dharma practices, these mindfulness practices to those situations. Because it's hard, because everybody gets very angry and very upset, and you understand it, I get it. And yeah. I totally get it, you know. Part of what martial arts and Buddhism saved me from was the fact that when I was a kid, I was a rageaholic, you know, and got in serious trouble for it. Mm-hmm. But I realized that that was not the way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I always think of MLK saying, you know, hate's too heavy a burden, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And so I think in those ways, I think Buddhism has something still fresh to offer, but it's really challenging.
Yeah.
So when President Obama says something like that, I'm sure a lot of people read it and go, but, you know, but I think that's the kind of wisdom that helps us evolve, recognizing that just as human beings, we go through various stages. And mm-hmm. so I think our country is going through that too. Mm-hmm. I think we're kind of in the teenage years, you know, mm-hmm. and we'll mature, hopefully. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned the imagery of the other, it reminded me of the end of Enter the Dragon when he has all the mirrors and then has to shatter yes. the imagery in order to really see and focus what's clear.
That's absolutely it. That metaphor. And what's interesting in that movie, mm-hmm. a little bit of movie geek stuff, that entry point where he has the talk with his teacher, mm-hmm. his sifu or sensei, was cut out of some of the releases. Mm-hmm. So when it went back into video format, they put it back in. Because mm-hmm. that scene doesn't make the same sense.
Right, right.
But he's talking about that with his teacher and saying, you know, you have to look beyond the illusion. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I would say that in Buddhism, what we're trying to do is go beyond the illusion of separation.